say your goodbyes, lard ass, because you're already dead.
Cool Kids Club podcast. Like... This is John Jones speaking. With me are Chibi Goku, Zionic Freak, Vimon Josh.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about Fist of the North Star, the movie, which adapts the first, 49 episodes. Is that right? And
somewhere around there, yeah.
And I have seen the dub of it. I think the other ones, the other people have also seen the dub.
Yeah.
And we're also going to talk about the censorship of this movie. And I guess we'll start with Chibi Goku. He wanted to talk about the censorship of it.
I've actually not seen the movie, but I am familiar with what was censored in it. So this is going to be a little hard for me to explain. Fuck, where do I want to start? Okay, basically, to start off things, the Fist of the North Star movie was much more violent than the TV series, and
it was more along the lines of the manga in terms of violence.
That's true. I too.
The violence wasn't just simple, more blood. It was actually more graphic.
There's like heads exploding in every scene.
And intestines like coming out too.
Yeah.
And then some like guys like skull like from what I've read is in the edited version, like they turned this footage black and white where the guy's like skull goes flying out of his head where the skin rips off.
Well, basically from what I saw of those censored clips you showed me, in the movie itself, the footage was like tinted or slowed down.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when I first saw this if it was like reanimated somewhere else or like it was lost footage they decided to tack onto it, or I wasn't sure.
I just saw this this morning, but I don't... What scene are you guys talking about? Which death scene?
The scene where... oh, God, what's his name gives? Wow, I'm forgetting the character names. This shows you how long ago I saw the episodes.
I mean, I have an example. Like, one of the scenes you can find is when Kenshiro is fighting Heart, which in the movie is Jaggy's bodyguard.
Is that the huge fat guy?
Yeah, the fat guy, and the guy's like, see, I'm tough as nails, and as his body start, his hands are sticking to his gut, and then it explodes, and, like, guts fly out everywhere. It's like that was, like, one particular scene there.
Yeah, but what'd they edit out of it? I don't get it. Did they, like, make it so it was less violent or something?
Surprisingly enough, they let a lot of content intact, but, like, they edited, like, specific scenes. Actually, show you a clip from what was from the uncensored version?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
So we can all get an idea, like, how this was done.
Yeah.
We can use this as a show notes.
Yeah, we can, like, link to it on the Toon Radio blog.
Yeah, or I can use my blog, too.
Yeah. But there's still a lot of violence in this. Like, this one guy gets cut into, like, three pieces and everything, you know? It's not exactly tame.
Yeah, which is what I really liked about this movie. It was, I mean, like, in the TV show, it was nothing but, like, shadows exploding and, like, white sperm coming out of him, or
cleaner.
Either or. And then this one, it's actual, like, oh, the blood is red, or it's not oil coming out of him or something.
I guess my understanding is this movie did get complaints, and Toei had to tone it down for video release. What is really odd is Italy actually got the uncensored version. Oh, I have heard the Italian version is... I think I read somewhere that some footage was cut in the Italian version, but it was overall more uncensored than the remastered version that Toei released.
Oh, I kind of... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of know what this is. When I watched this morning, the edited version, they have it like... sort of like turned white or whatever when the finger is going into his chest. You know, so it doesn't look as violent, I guess. I don't know. I don't think the censoring is very effective. It's still violent.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look as violent as anything that came out in 1985 or 86 when this movie came out.
Yeah.
But
what was the opening? Was it the Italian opening that you linked to of this that you really liked? It was like some Fist of the North Star opening. You know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about the French version? Where it's like
French.
A redone song and everything?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The French version was a hack job, I believe.
I like that French opening. Even though all they're saying is can and then blah, 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 French words, and then can and then da, 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 da. I really like it.
Okay, I guess we should talk about the actual movie if we don't have anything more to say about the censorship or anything.
All right, well, I can take it from here. The real title of this episode of the podcast is Death to Ears, the podcast of the North Star, Death to All in Its Grasp.
Indeed.
So that'll be our Fist of the North Star title opening for this podcast. But yeah, this movie came out in 1985, 86. You guys have a Wikipedia page opened up, right?
Yeah, 1986, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, that was around... around the time of episode 63 of the anime, so.
Okay, so yeah, they basically made this movie while the TV show was airing, which basically the TV show is based off the manga, kind of.
This, it doesn't quite make it to the end of the second arc, does it, this movie? Like, does the second arc of the TV series end with, like, another battle between Rao and Ken?
No, in the anime, there's, like, another arc where Rei is fighting this guy named, Yuta.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, but,
And also there's a character that's in the second arc of the anime that wasn't in the movie, so.
I was going to say, in the second arc, like, Lin and Bat are, like, 10 years older, too. And they're, like, teenagers and that.
You're thinking of, like, the fifth arc, but that's the second.
Okay.
Doesn't Rei die in this movie?
Yeah, he also dies in the anime, but he dies, like, a bit later.
Oh.
Yeah, the movie and the anime, it's like they were taking the best parts of the movie and try to condense what is in those, you know, first 60 episodes into one movie.
Yeah.
So they did make a lot of changes around. Like, for example, in the TV show, like, where I'm caught up at, well, first of all, there's three of the there's a four total of the students of Hokuto no Ken, which is, we only get three of them in this movie, which is Jaggy, Rao, and Ken. But there is a fourth, which is Toki. And Toki doesn't show up in this movie. And another thing that they changed around was the fact that in the TV show and in the manga, Toki gets, like, he's in a prison by the, like, this warden. And then in the movie, the warden's actually, like, Rao's second in command when Rao's taking over the planet or whatever, or conquering the world.
But the warden isn't in the anime at all, in the movie at all, is he?
He is in the movie. He was the guy that fought was fighting with Ray before Ray took on Rao.
Oh,
like the guy with all the whips, that was the warden that was in the TV show, where he was in charge of the prison that Toki was being
led. Is this Toki character? Is he good, or is he like another Rao, another evil character, or what?
Josh, you've seen.
He's Jesus.
Yeah, he's Jesus.
Yeah, what?
Never mind. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was saying, like, with Toki, like, because there's two sides to the power of Hokuto no Ken, which you can either use it for, you know, for martial arts or for fighting or killing, or you can use it for healing purposes, since it goes both ways. But Toki, he wanted to use his powers of Hokuto no Ken to be able to heal and help people. So he's not as corrupt as, or he's not as power hungry as Jaggy or Rao was.
I didn't, one thing I didn't get about Jaggy is, like, why was he, like, trying to kill Ken or whatever in that flashback scene? Like, why were they against each other to begin with? I don't really get it.
Oh, that's because I don't think they explained it in the movie, but in the series,
yeah.
In the series, basically, there can only be one successor to the Fists of the North Star. So, basically, whoever doesn't get, like, promoted to be the head successor has to either get their fists sealed, which basically means they can never fight again, or they have to be killed.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So
yeah.
It was kind of a mix of that. He knew that Ken would have to kill him. So he was going to try to kill Ken first, also that he was trying to get revenge that he wasn't chosen.
Ken was already chosen as Fist of the North Star at this point, or no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Right, which takes us to the beginning of the movie, which the movie starts out with, we get this backstory about how, like, we get this nice, peaceful planet, and then we get, like, the narrator guy that's been pretty much in every streamlined dub out there. He was actually the voice of the master too, which I can't think of his name, but basically Ken's master, which is voiced by the same guy, and and what happens is, like, the series takes place in the year 1990X, which I think we all remember in those 10 years that there was a nuclear holocaust and everyone ran around in motorcycles and mohawks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't that far long ago, and Clinton was still in office somehow.
Yeah, it was Judgment Day.
Yeah. But so what happens is, like, you know, the world gets taken over by a global scale nuclear war, and it comes to a world of, like, dog eat dog, the strongest survive environment. And basically, you know, everyone's out pretty much for themselves. You have your gangs and clans together to try to survive. But the movie starts out with our main character Ken and his girlfriend, you know, Julia. And they get ambushed, or not, they get confronted by Shin, which is Ken's best friend at the time. And pretty much with this, it's, really the basic plot of the first arc of Fist of the North Star is Ken is on a quest to try to find his girlfriend because his best friend, you know, jacked him, beat him, you know, beat the crap out of him, left him scarred physically, and Ken has to get his woman back and, of course, defeat his friend. Which is what happens in this anime, where basically Shin shows up with his gang, and then him and Ken go at it in a fight. but then Ken loses. But at this time, Ken is already the successor of Fist of the North Star, or he was hailed that from his master. And Shin is actually a successor or student from the Southern Cross or the South Star. And it's like it's prophesied or whatever that those two should never fight, but they do anyways because Shin started it because he was a bit of a dick. And so what happens is that Shin convinces Ken's girlfriend or Yulia or I like calling her Yulia, but anyways, like he pretty much was making her tell her, you know, tell him that she loves him by hurting Ken. And what he does is Shin etches out seven stars or like the sign of the Big Dipper with his fingers by punching holes in his chest and pretty much leaves him for dead when taking Julia with him. But of course at that, and then also we get to see Ken's two brothers. They're not all related, but they're actually like just step brothers kind of because they're all go to the same school. And so on a cliff, there's Jaggy and Rao that are watching Ken getting his butt kicked. And then Jaggy's like, why don't you go down there and, you know, kick Shin's ass and take the title of, you know, Fist of the North Star. And Rao just kind of sits there and he's like, you know, biding his time basically. And of course, Jaggy, you know, being the wuss that he is, he's like, no, okay, fine, you can do whatever you want. And of course, later in the scene, we get to see Jaggy drag Ken's corpse to like a cliff. And of course, like, he basically like knocks Ken off the cliff, and then he punches the ground, and like a big shard of rock falls inside the cliff area where Ken just fell. So apparently, like Ken was still alive when it happened, but you know Jaggy was trying to bury him or whatever.
The thing I was confused about, this is going a bit later. Basically, Ken somehow knows that it was Jaggy that pushed him off the cliff, even though he's supposed to be unconscious at this time.
Yeah, that was true. Yeah, it was like, oh, I figured, you know, like I should have known it was you, like when he confronted Jaggy later in the movie. So maybe he was like in and out of consciousness, but he understood his voice. They don't really explain it, but the next scene after that is that Rao comes back to his master at the temple, and he's like, hey, Ken got his butt kicked. I should be Fist of the North Star. What's up? And his master's like, no, I already appointed Ken, and, you know, tough luck about that. And so basically Rao is like, you know, I'm way more powerful than you, and he demonstrates this by there's the two Buddha statues, or statues in the temple, which in the TV show they kind of explain it, that's the martial arts style, and he basically, like, powers up with this huge aura, and the statues just crumble around him, but he's able to grab the statue's head and his biceps and crush them against his, like, pecs. And he's like, dude, Rao was like, yeah, I didn't, like, can you do this? No. And then, of course, like, for decimating his temple, you know, Rao gets banned from the temple and everything, but he does kill his master, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I think so. But the master keeps telling him, like, power without purpose is meaningless, and Rao doesn't really care. He just keeps destroying shit.
Yeah. But then after that, like, Rao goes on top of a mountain and, like, has, like, I guess, like, an acid trip with, like, you know, technicolor, like, seizure colors and everything happening. And he's having, like, a Highlander moment where he's like, you know, I know everything. I'm the strongest.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty trippy. It was weird.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing like that in the anime.
Yeah, I don't even really know, like, the purpose of, like, having, like, those colors, like, go back and forth. Because it's something on the lines of, like, people almost having a seizure if they see that. I'm not sure what purpose it really served. Because they could have just had him up on the cliff and just, like, tell him that, but then have, like, a landscape and, like, crap busting around him or something. I don't know. But I don't know why they did that. But anyways, like, the next scene is we get to see some settlers walk through the desert. And what happens is a bunch of these... this biker gang, which is like the Zed gang or whatever, they bust out of the ground and kill everybody, and they basically are there to take their you know, their food and their belongings. The only thing that's worthless in the future is jewels and money, because there's no way to actually spend it or find its value, because that way of the old world doesn't exist anymore. It's all about food, and it's they live on a barter system where basically, like, food and water and gas are traded as, you know, or more of a ways of trading for that are actually worth more than anything else.
And yet, I can't I can't tell. Do, like, other animals other than humans exist in this world? They have, like, the dog in the anime, but there's, like, no plants. It seems like there's almost nothing, you know? Like, what do they eat?
Yeah, I don't know where the dog came from, because that was the only dog that I saw, and it was a puppy. Like, the dog's been a puppy for, like, up to episode 40, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been wandering the desert for, like, months at this point.
Yeah.
But
what I was going to say is they have this barter system, yet none of them think to keep seeds that can grow plants.
Yeah, except for, like, Yuria. I mean, I think she has, like, the only, had the only seeds, right?
Yeah, basically.
I think all the seeds, it must have been, like, destroyed in the nuclear holocaust, except for those or something. Who knows?
Yeah, but there was that one scene in the movie where there was this guy that was saying, oh, it's a bunch of seeds, they're worthless.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe they think they can't grow or something, because at some point in the movie they say that the only place where you can grow food is in the Southern Cross region.
True.
Oh, yeah, because that was the most vibrant area, like, where the Southern Cross was. That can actually, that's flourishable and stuff can actually grow there.
Yeah.
But in the TV show, like, there's certain places where Ken visits where people are growing crops. So the world isn't, like, all, you know, shot to hell. It's able to reproduce and grow in certain areas.
That's probably the difference between the movie and the show. Because in the movie, Shen kept talking like, you know, the rest of the world is worthless. So it's only here that we can be, well, Yuria, you know.
Yeah, he's like, I took over this city and I had this, like, nice temple that didn't get crapped up like the rest of the buildings, so we can stay here. And I gotta admit, Shin does have a nice place in the post-apocalypse.
And then Rao shows up and fucks everything up.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, another thing interesting was that, I think, because, like, in the movie there's a, we'll get to this too, but Julia has her seeds, and Ken was able to, you know, take them, but, and that I guess Shin didn't find or whatever, you know, didn't see any value to it. But when Ken meets up with Lin and Bat, like, you know, Lin is able to plant one of the seeds and, like, grows a flower. And I think, and, like, I like how Josh pointed out when we're watching this that the flower is kind of showing a symbol of time, but, like, as time is progressing through the movie, because the flower does eventually bloom. Which is really neat. Because I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, because it's like, otherwise it just seems like this is all happening, like, within a few days or so.
Yeah, it does give a better passage of time seeing the flower bloom and, you know, evolve like that. And I mean, otherwise you're just watching, like, the fastest 2 hours of a movie where, like, man, there was, like, no time, anything to distance this movie apart from, like, regarding the events. But anyways, like, we actually get to meet, speaking of Lin and Bat, in the next scene, we actually get to see them running from some, I think the Zed bike gang. And it's actually pretty funny because they find themselves, like, driving through, like, an abandoned building somehow. And then they fly off, but they drop, like, 100 stories down. And, like, you know, you see Bat, like, swim, like, in midair to his car. And then the car just kind of does, like, a bunny hop when he hits the ground and then drives off. So it's got to be the most durable go-kart on the planet.
I think it would have to be if it survived.
Yeah, if it survived, like, several of the gangs, then falling 100 stories is probably nothing for it. It's a very well-built go-kart, just for it to bunny hop and, like, everyone to survive. Because in reality, that would never happen. But we do get to see that, so eventually, like, Lin and Bat get caught up with the bike gang, and the bike gangs get, you know, scrounging for food. And then Lin's about to get crushed, and she sends out, like, this new type wave. For, you know, because with Lin, she can't speak because of the horrors of the war and, like, everything that's happened. And so what happens is that we get to see a mysterious stranger show up and, like, wreck shit. Like, he hits his like, fist against the building. And not only does that, but the building falls on top of the stranger. And then the stranger is able to walk through the building as it's falling on him. And that is some insane stuff right there. And then as that's happening, we get to see the dust fly off of his jacket, and we find out that it is actually Ken, and like in a poncho.
And with a full beard and mustache.
Yeah, so there's no telling how he's, I guess, like, that, I don't know, like, he, like, because Lin cried out to him or something, like, that woke him up from some, like, 8-month slumber or something.
Probably.
So then, yeah. So then, what happens is that like the gang goes to challenge Ken, and they shoot an arrow at him, and then of course, like Ken just kind of like digs it out of his like his chest and just throws it on the ground, and then Ken goes over there and wrecks them up like really bad, like he always does, because that's Ken.
One thing I do want to mention at this point, one thing that I kind of felt was missing from the movie was the explanation of pressure points.
That is true.
Because it's like, otherwise it just seems like he punches the guys and then they just suddenly explode. Like, without any logic to it or anything.
Yeah, they kind of took out that whole, like, Toei formula where, like, they have to explain their attacks after they hit them in, like, four different places. And, like, oh, this is going to do this to you. And in the movie, it's just like, you know, Ken's awesome, don't F with him, and here's why. Which is pretty simple enough. But, yeah, anyway, so Ken gets taken to, like, a local village from Lin and Bat, and he's, like, laying on the table. And then eventually, like, the Zed gang shows up and, like, you know, wreaks havoc. And I like this part because, like, Ken just gets off the table or leaps off of it, and the table just disintegrates. And then not only does the table disintegrate, but when he like, I don't know what he does. I think he just looks at the door, and the door is, like, too scared to open for Ken, so it then just explodes, which I thought was awesome. I don't think Ken touched the door. I think the door knew that, like, Ken was a bad mofo and just exploded on itself because it couldn't handle Ken touching it. That's what I think really happened. So then anyways, like, Ken goes to where, like, all the chaos is, which basically the Zed gang leader is holding Lin up against his head. And, like, this girl's going to get crushed if, you know, if you don't give me all your food and everything, and why my men are dead. And then Ken just kind of shows up, and they all try to gang on him, and he just, like, you just see him, like, they try to go up to take him on, and he just, like, backhands them, and they fly, like, three blocks over into, like, to a building or something, just out of nowhere. It's like they weigh, it's like the guys are, like, weigh as much as, like, a paper ball. It was pretty amazing. And so anyways, like, Ken uses his technique of the thousand fist. I can't think of the full name. Crap. But then Zed gets his head exploded. But then, of course, by this time, Lin's able to speak. Because I think she shouts for his name because she does in the TV show. And then, no, never mind. No, Ken has to awaken her. That's right. So she can talk. And then she cries out to Ken, like, once he's showered and, like, dry shaved his beard off. And then goes out and wanders to, like, you know, still find Julia. So then we get to our next scene, which is, unless you want to add something to it.
No.
Okay. We didn't get to, see our next, person in the movie, which is another main character, which is, goes by the name of Ray. And we see this figure in this pink cloak, being harassed by this biker dude. And this guy tries to, like, you know, mess with this person in pink, because this guy thinks this person's a girl, but it's actually Ray. And then Ray uses a technique called Nanto Seiken, and basically he uses his fingers as, like, you know, scissors and can cut people up into, like, shish kebabs. And that's his superpower, or his martial arts power.
Yeah, it's the, Fists of the Southern Waterfowl or something like that.
I don't know. I've always heard it was Nanto Seiken, and they even said it in the show.
Well, yeah, but...
But anyways, we get to go. So after that scene, we get to a small town of these, like, biker dudes, because this movie has nothing but biker dudes, because that's what the post-apocalypse will have. And
the series is inspired by Mad Max, so
which all three of those movies are awesome. I do like Mad Max 2 the most. But we can always talk about Mad Max at another time.
Yeah.
That's a huge other discussion we can always go into. But, yeah, so anyways, like, we go to this town, and the only thing we see is that there's a guy buried, and there's this huge logging, like, saw that they're using. And they're making this guy, you know, oh, if you want to live, you got to chop your best friend's head off. And so then the guy can't do it, but he, like, leaves a really nasty cut in the guy's, like, neck or something. And they're like, oh, man, you pussy. You can't do that. Like, you know, what kind of man are you when you can't cut your best friend up? Which believes that, like, I guess in the post-apocalypse, all the video games got destroyed. So I guess these guys must be really, really bored to like grab random people and bury them in the ground. But like, and I guess they can't really resist because they're not as strong as the bike gang. But yeah, I mean, like, just as a note, in the post-apocalypse, someone has to hide video games so that we can play those when we have to survive. So at least we don't go around cutting people's heads off that are buried in the ground. It'll save the population and, of course, you know, be less gory and less messy. Just saying.
Were they just doing that to that guy for fun? I assumed he had, like, done something that offended them or something.
It was probably both of the two. No, because obviously, like, in the post-apocalypse, you don't have to do anything to offend anybody or to get really bored. Because, like, you can look at somebody wrong and they're like, oh, I'm more powerful than you. I will find any excuse. Because this is nothing but bullies. Like, bullies will find any excuse to pick on anybody. Yeah, you know, weaker than them. They don't have to have a concrete excuse other than, like, find one lousy reason. And it's the same in the post-apocalypse.
Yeah, these bandits do a lot of that stuff in this show.
Yeah, but... So anyways, like, when this is happening, we see that Ray shows up, and he's asking for the guy with, because apparently they call their leader Ken, because he has 7 scars too, but also has a mask on. And then we see Ray show up to this town, and he starts asking questions like, oh, I'd really like to meet your leader and everything. And like, okay, well, you can meet our leader when you cut this guy's head off. And then the guy who hands him the sword, or the saw, like, you know, Ray grabs it and, like, goes right, like, down the middle of the guy's, like, skull. And then the guy looks like the guy is still alive. And he looks up at his, like, the saw in his hand. He's like, I have a splitting headache. And then dies.
Yeah.
That was a very amusing moment. That reminded me of that one scene from the live-action Battle Royale movie where, like, one of the kids gets a saw in his head. And he's just like, oh, my head really hurts. Are you okay? And then, like, someone asks him, like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I just had this headache. And then he just falls out. He just dies. I love Battle Royale, but... So then anyways, like, after this happens, like, the actual real Kenshiro shows up. And he's like, hey, could you tell me about this guy? And they're like, oh, that's our leader, Ken. And goes, huh. No, that's my brother, Jaggy. I guess he really likes to admire me so much. And then, like, of course, he breaks the statue down with his fist, and then, of course, he proceeds to, you know, punch everybody else in the town to death, as he always does. So then he teams up with Ray to go after Jaggy. They for some reason, they find out where Jaggy is, which is, like, an abandoned, like, airport. So I think they go immediately, like, straight there. And then, once they get to the airport, like, Jaggy's held up in, like, this building, and he's got, And also Ray's after Jaggy for an important reason that Jaggy abducted his sister. So his sister is like this, sex servant, basically, to Jaggy. And we actually do get to see a panty shot of her in this movie. This movie does have fan service. Because we do get to see Julia in her, in, like, nude boobies. Like, later.
Well, the TV series also had fan service like that.
I guess it kind of did.
Like, there was that one scene where Ray ripped open Mamiya's, like...
Oh, yeah, open. Yeah. Yeah, Mamiya was the only, like, fan service girl, and, like, yeah, Ray treated her like crap.
And she's not even in this movie, though. So.
Yeah, Mamiya was another, like, main character of the story, too, of the manga and the TV show, like, after what happened after the Shin arc. And, yeah, like, she's not even really, like, she's not even mentioned or anything in this movie. But, yeah, anyways, like, so they show up to the airport and they meet Hart, which Hart's this really big fat guy that was in the 4th or 5th episode of the TV series. So then anyways, like, Ken's able to, fight. My mind's starting to go worse on me or something. Do you want to take over this scene while I get some water?
Which scene are we up to?
Where the Ken fights the fat guy, Hart.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Go get some water. He keeps, like, trying to punch the fat guy, and, like, he gets his hand stuck in there, and then he, you know, punches him enough that he makes it beautiful. Yeah, exactly. Did they keep the Japanese audio for that? Because it sounds just like it does in the... show, which I've been watching in Japanese, the sound.
They sound very similar because, like, in the yeah, because like in the streamlined dub, which is like that's what I aired on Justin TV, because I actually do like the dub, but like the atatata in the movie and in the TV show sound the same, so I think they use the same audio.
Yeah, I think so too.
But yeah, so then after. Yeah, so yeah, anyways, after Ken like is able to like kick this guy like a bunch of times, he makes like a crater in his gut and then like and then sticks his finger inside of it, and then Hart's like, "Oh, you didn't even do anything." And like Hart's over there like mushing his gut back in shape. He's like an oversized Pillsbury doughboy.
Yeah, he's huge.
Yeah, so then anyways, like then the Hart starts grabbing his gut and it's like sticking to his hands, and he's like, and as soon as he goes like, "Oh, what's going on?" his gut just explodes. And then we see like intestines everywhere and everything. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when he exploded, didn't he, like, vaporize or something?
Yeah, no, they had the censored part, or, like, the uncensored part where, like, his gut exploded, and then he fell on the ground, and then we see this geyser of blood shoot up. Mm-hmm. I think that's what happened, yeah. And I've actually got the audio clip of that where he tells him, like, "Say your goodbyes, lard ass, because you're already dead." So I actually have that as an opening for this episode, and I will use that. So, but anyways, after that scene, they do they meet up with Jaggy, and of course, behind Jaggy, also what happened with Jaggy and Kenshiro is that we get a flashback of them at their dojo, and Jaggy's trying to assault Ken with a shotgun, and then Ken turns around and is able to hit his pressure points in his head, which causes Jaggy's head to like be very deformed, and so Jaggy has to like reverse the pressure points. And so Jaggy's is basically this deformed like monstrosity, which is why he has a mask on. And I think he did the scars too because to be able to draw Ken out, because that was the purpose in the TV show. So we get to see, because we also get to see like what kind of Jaggy looks like, because one of his henchmen is like lifts up this veil of what he looks like to try to get his boss's attention, and he starts dry throwing up. He's like, "Oh, God." And he's like, "Oh, you think that's repulsive, huh? Huh? Let me show you repulsive." And then he destroys his own henchmen and his own room. But, so, yeah. So, anyways, like, Ken and Jaggy are fighting on top of a rooftop. And then, of course, Ray's able to actually rescue. What?
And then he throws all that gasoline everywhere.
Yeah, then he has, like, a Zippo lighter to catch the roof on fire. But then also, Ken's able. And then, because at this point, Ken's just like toying with Jaggy. And then, of course, the roof collapses, and then Jaggy starts throwing rocks at him, which does nothing to Ken, because Ken at this point is already like powered up to that his jacket and shirt rips off. And in the TV show, when that happens, you know everyone is going to die. There's no stopping Ken when he's at that point. And Jaggy's like, you figured after the first, like, you know, stone, maybe the second one, after not doing anything, you figured he would have stopped. But he does it like two or three more times after that. And it, of course, does nothing to Ken. And then, of course, Ken defeats Jaggy, which means he kills him. Trying to think what happened after. So then after that, we get to meet up with, he's able to help, Ray's sister, and of course, Ray's sister gets confronted to open her eyes because of Lynn shows up with the flower, because she's like, "Oh, I see this flower," and she's like, "No, you don't, stupid girl. You gotta open your eye," and that's pretty much how verbatim she told her. her sister opens up her eyes and she's like, "Oh, the flower is beautiful," and it's like, "No, duh, you gotta open your eyes, stupid." And then Ray's sister's back, sister's back, and then of course Ray's sister's is with she just kind of disappears after that.
Yeah, she doesn't do anything after they rescue her.
Yeah, because in the TV show, she basically hangs out with Mamiya at the fortress base when Ken's out there to find his brothers, and we go back to them every once in a while to show that they are still alive and everything's okay. But. I'm trying to think what else happens after that scene. Pretty much what happens is that we get to the point where Rao is starting to go out and conquer places. So, his second in command that we called the warden in the TV show is riding on like a convertible Cadillac, and Rouse on his like huge big old horse, and they just kind of cruise around the countryside conquering places.
Yeah, and then they fight the Wolf Pack gang. I think it was.
Yeah, the Wolf Clan. And so like it was because like Rouse soldiers, I thought they were like cyborgs or something because they have like black mask on and everything. They look like the Shadowfoot from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's what Rouse armies consist of, because like they look like the henchmen from oh my gosh, who is the main Shredder? Yeah, Shredder's like henchmen or something. That's what Rouse's army looks like. So then, anyways, the main guy, the Wolf Clan, like decides to go, like his superpowers to turn into steel, so nothing can hurt him, and he just kind of plows through the guys at one point, like some guys attacking to him, and he just starts eating. He catches the guy in midair with his mouth and starts eating him.
Didn't he like bite his head off? Or?
He bit like half his body off. And he's like, nom, nom, nom. Oh, this is so good. And he's like stomping on everybody, picking their bones off the bottom of his feet. And he's like, and he spits the guy out of his mouth. And he's like, Raoul, what you got? I'm all made of steel. So then Raoul like uses his own like fist technique and punches the Wolf Clan leader like through a mountain, through the other side of a mountain. And then the Wolf leader's like, he has like all these dents in his head. And he like pops them out like they're like, you know, popping out a dent out of a car or something. And he's like, yeah, I didn't do anything. And then like his body, his steel breaks up. But then you see parts of his body like sticking out, like he's got like a hemorrhoid or something. And then like he explodes, or like his body just deteriorates or something. And then like the warden guy is like, yeah, wow, good job taking out that guy, because I don't have to really do anything. But but also in this movie we get to see scenes of like the engaged life, forced engagement life of Julia and Shen, where Shen is getting the biggest case of blue balls because Julia will not please him in any way. And because Shen is like the hopeless lover boy of like, you know, oh, Julia, I've done all this and found all these beautiful dresses and jewels for you, and yet your love won't be returned to me. What's up? And she's like, well, you know, you did kind of like kill my lover, my love interest, Ken. And you abducted me, and you're trying to force me to love you? F you.
And killing a bunch of people to give her all these jewels and stuff.
Yeah, it's like basically like blood money is where this, or blood jewels is where it's coming from. She's like, you know, it's the same, you know, being Shin's love interest is the same as like, you know, being a drug lord's love interest. We're like, you know, like, you know darn well where that money and jewels are coming from. It's off the dead corpses of your fallen enemies. And she's like, I don't want any of that stuff. If you're... She basically is like, you know, if you, you know, didn't kill Ken, I'd probably, and you know, maybe you forgave, or if I can forgive you, that we could possibly go together. We can go out to the post-apocalypse Dairy Queen and get something to eat there one night, but you keep me up in this castle all day. And I just kind of sit around and do nothing and mope. But we do get to see, because after Jaggy's defeated, like, their news spreads to Shin's fortress that Ken is alive. And then Julia actually, like, you know, is able to sneak out. And, of course, when she goes down to, like, these lower levels, she runs into Rao, which he just kind of shows up uninvited to Shin's doorstep. And then Rao just kind of shows up and says, hey, I'm taking your woman. Deal with it. And Shin's just like, all right.
This was the point in the movie where it started to get really interesting for me, because it's like, in the series itself, Rao isn't even introduced until Shin is dead, so it's like the the two meeting is kind of, you know, a big deal, because it's like in the series there's no way for them to
meet, because I mean the only way I would see them meeting is if like they met before the war,
post-apocalypse,
because it was in the TV show there was flashbacks of you know, like regarding Toki saving Ken's life in the bomb shelter and stuff like that. Shin and Ken were friends growing up in the dojos, so they obviously knew each other. But like regarding that meetup in the movie, that never happened because Ken already killed Shin by that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much at this point, like Julia gets a gets taken from Rao, and then Ken shows up at the Shin's fortress looking for her, and Shin's like, "Oh, you're kind of a little bit too late for that." And then Ken wails on Shin because Shin was like, "Oh, had I known you'd been like a total badass, and like the year since I took a year or so since I took you down, I probably would have been fought you a lot better than I am now." And so Shin gets his butt beaten, and he's pretty much Shin, and Shin shows and like reveals how much he really loved Julia, because even though he did take her from Ken. He was actually crying in remorse of how Rao took her, and there was nothing he can possibly do to get her back. And even Ken at one point mentioned that I am kind of a bit jealous that do I really deserve to love Julia as much as Shin did, even though Shin got nothing in return.
He said something you loved her more because crazy people feel stronger emotions or something like that.
I guess. And Shin was just insane and obsessed with power and trying to get Julia's affection. But then, of course, in the movie and also in the show, it was actually Jaggy that convinced Shin to go over there and jack Ken's girl from him.
Yeah.
Because during the fight with Jaggy, Ken, Jaggy admits to Ken, I'm the one that gave Shin the idea to do it. It's not my, and it's like, hey, all I did was to convince him to take in your girl, your girl from you. I didn't make him do it. I just kind of gave him throughout the notion just to stir up crap.
In the show, Rao and Jaggy, were they there when Shin took Julia?
No.
Because in episode 5, when they showed this scene, they were not there.
Yeah, because in the movie they were only there, but in the show they didn't have any indication of that.
Yeah, so Ken was not in the show throwing down the cliff or anything like that.
No, none of that.
He was just left to die there.
Yeah. I don't know. Does Shin know that they were there in the movie? I don't think he did. Did he?
I don't think he did either.
Yeah. He just assumed that Shin had died after he beat him.
Yeah, or I think, because I thought in the movie that Shin and Rao already fought, and then Shin was already weak from the battle. But I don't think that really happened, though, now that I watched it again.
Yeah.
So then, they take us to Shin's fortress where Julia's being captured, and then Lin and Bat and Ray are in the town, and, Rao's coming back from, everyone's, Rao's second in command, the Warren guy, or Uther, or whatever his name is. It starts with a U and ends with it's U-T-H-G-E-R or something. It might be Uther. I don't know. But he starts yelling at the crowd saying, King Rao. He's like, "I can't hear you. Louder, louder." And starts, whipping people. But, it was interesting because, Lin's able to see what go through the crowd and see up ahead, what's going on. And Lin's able to tell, in the caddy, that Julia's in the car. Oh, that must be Julia, because that's got to be the girl that Ken was talking about. And it was interesting because, and then during the crowd or during the – when Rao was riding back, his horse gets, spooked or stops. And then Rao sees, Lin, and he's like – she has, an aurora about her that, that's similar to Ken. So, even – it's like Rao knew that, she happened to meet Ken somehow, which I thought was pretty interesting.
I kind of thought that whole scene, though, was kind of weird, I mean, that she just suddenly has this aura around her.
Well, she did some weird thing with her aura in the first scene she was in, didn't she? Where she called Ken with it or something?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really get it. I don't know what the point of it is, but it's there. Anyway, Rao doesn't seem to... after he sees her, she just kind of... leaves, he doesn't do anything about it.
What's weird about it.
Yeah,
she ducks out of there because she knows it was kind of a weird, awkward moment, and then his horse just starts riding again. It's just, and then Rao was just kind of like, oh well, and then he's like, giddy up, and then just the parade still goes on. And then and we also find something interesting about Lin, which he apparently knows a lot about underwater bases and old factory layouts. He's like, yeah, the only weakness to a fortress like this is going to be the waterway, because that's what they used for factories before the war and all this other stuff. I'm like, how would a kid his age know that? Because I sure didn't.
Well, I mean, to survive, I guess he would have to know something like that.
Yeah, or maybe somebody taught him, or he maybe that's where he came from. I don't know. But I thought, yeah, I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting. And then so they're able to sneak in and find Julia, and then Lynn's saying, you know, hey, Ken's going to come for you. He's going to take you out of here. And, you know, Julia's like, no, it's a trap. And then, yeah, Lynn hands Julia the flower, and he goes, oh, I know it's you because these are the flowers that Ken gave, or the seeds that Ken gave me and told me about you. And it's like a full bloom flower in a you know, pot. And so then the card's coming back and they take off, and then Rao shows up. And then he starts questioning Julia. It's like, where'd you get that flower from? And like, I figured her response would be like, I don't know, up my ass? Why do you care? But so then anyways, they take because of her having a flower out of nowhere, they're able to crucify her on a cross in the middle of town. And then Uther is like holding up the roses like, this is forbidden! Someone brought this in our sanction! Everyone should know this is not allowed! And we were going to crucify this girl because she had a flower out of her ass for no reason. But this is forbidden. But then, so anyways, like, no, so they're like trying to figure out where the rose came from. And then Ray kind of like shows up and is like, yeah, it's mine. And he's like, you want to do something about it? And then of course, Ray is able to take out the, you know, Uther. The Warren, because and the Warren has his whole tricks, because in the TV show he's got like two whips that he uses, but also he has like these cat of nine tails that he like has on a horn out of his helmet, and he whips those out and starts taking on Rao. He's taking out the Warren guy, and then of course once Ray defeats him, he's wanting to challenge Rao, of course. And of course, during this whole, like, it's like we have the montage of, like, the best song, 80s, you know, Fist of the North Star song ever. And it's basically like a montage of, like, Ken walking in the middle of the desert to, like, where Rao's fortress is. And then Ray and Rao are going at it. And then, of course, like, it ends with, he's able to hear Lynn cry out for Ken, and then he starts, like, you know, mad dashing it to the fortress. Because it's like, oh, snap, I think something bad, I think, it's like, oh, something must be up. And then pretty much by the time he gets there, like, Ray was about to use, like, some special technique of his, and then, like, you know, Rao just throws his cloak on him, and Ray's like, I can't see, and then he sticks his finger and, like, you know, Ray's, in his gut or whatever, no, in his chest. And then, like, as soon as, like, Ken shows up in the middle of the fight, like, Ray falls in his arms, and they have, like, that, you know, best friend dying moment or whatever, because, like, I know in the TV show, Ray does die.
Yeah. Well, basically, now, I'm sorry if this is spoiling it, because I don't think you've seen this far, but, I mean, is it okay if I...
I've played the video game, Ken's Rage, and it follows along the manga, so I know, like, a gist of what happens in the TV series.
Yeah, basically, in the series that the fight between Rao and Ray, basically Ray is injured, but Rao like hits some pressure point that allows him to live like another 3 days, just enough time for him to fight Yuta in that last part of the arc.
Yeah, because I think it was oh, go ahead.
But yeah, in the you go.
No, because what I was saying was, like, in the video game, because, again, it follows it straight along the manga and the storyline, and they mentioned that, like, you know, once Ray does defeat Yuta, that, like, basically, like, you know, Ray's on his deathbed, and then Ray pretty much admits to Mamiya that he truly loved her or something, and then, of course, he dies.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what I remember, like, off the video game. So then, anyways, so once that happens, like, Ray or, you know, Ken and Rao go at it, and, like, the climactic battle, which basically this, like, you know, stuff, like, crap goes, like, stuff goes insane here. Like, because they basically have, like, a half DBZ battle where they're floating in midair. Like, in the movie, like, Ray, like, Rao Hat was on his horse in midair, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it gets it's insane. Like,
it's kind of like all logic's just thrown out the window because it's like, hey, these two guys are fighting. Like these two arch enemies are fighting. Let's throw all logic out the window.
Yeah, screw this. This is going to be the best battle ever, and that's all we care about. And they so achieved that completely. Because then they got, like, you know, Ken, like, shooting, like, tornado kicks at, like, Rao, and then Rao throwing a punch at him, and that screws up, like, three, like, five city blocks, and there's black tornadoes going everywhere. It's a complete utter mess. And, like, the ground gets decimated and all this other stuff, but, I mean, there's actually two endings to this battle. There's one where it's a draw, and there's the other one that's the Rao wins. And I think I remember on the Wikipedia page, it did talk about that. Where basically, it was like, yeah, regarding the ending, it was like, I'm trying to think.
In the version we saw, wasn't it where Rao won?
Yeah, the version, I think it was like in theaters they showed it was a tie, but then when they released it on you know, VHS in the 80s, and on DVD, they had the ending where Rao actually won. And then, like, when they actually released the DVD, they had the two editions of the battle, like, regarding, like, you know, Rao, them being having a tie, and then, of course, Rao winning the fight, which both of those are on YouTube.
Wait, the one we watched, or the one I watched, anyway, I watched it on YouTube, is got Rao defeats Ken and then is persuaded by Lin to let Ken live. Is that...
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the one that was in theaters or not in theaters?
I think that was the one that was not in theaters when it was originally aired, and then when they put it on, like, home video, that was the thing that they had with it.
Oh, and then after that, it's got, like, Ken wandering around in the wilderness seeing, like, illusions of Julia or something.
Yeah, like, it goes there. So pretty much after that, yeah, because what happens, like, this is what kind of really pissed me off when I first saw this. Without me really knowing any backstory to Fist of the North Star, but in the movie, like, Julia was with Lin and Bat, and then all of a sudden she just disappears. Like, you know, where did she go? And then, like, you know, basically it was up to Ken to go out and try to, you know, continue to find her. And it's like, because in the TV show, or not in the TV show, but in the manga and the TV show, and what I played in the game, like, it was later that I think Rao actually had Julia, or was able to get her later, because, like, she didn't really die or something. Because the spoil, because we're going to talk about this in the next, you know, our next episode of the TV series, but, yeah, like, because Shin actually tells, like, when Ken's fighting Shin, Shin actually states that Julia couldn't take the guilt of you being dead, even though I tried to love her, and she decided to, you know, end her life by jumping off the building. But then we find out that she actually really is alive towards the end of the series.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a spoiler alert there, but I mean, I like the ending to this because it was like they have that it's done by the Komodo Band, which is the same people who did Heart of Madness during the montage of the Rei and Rao battle, and so they sung the ending song to this, and it's basically like this like peaceful 80s pop song or whatever, and it's basically Ken walking through a desert, but then there's a forest. And he's getting, like, I guess, like, he's seeing Julia off in the distance, and he keeps walking. It's just a really cool ending, and as the credits roll, but then you find out, I think it was just nothing but a mirage, and it's just him wandering through the desert.
It was, yeah, that was weird.
I think it's kind of funny how the TV show's ending is, like, a bunch of peaceful images of nature, you know?
Yeah, that was the first ending.
Yeah.
Yep. Of a world that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. There is no nothing like that in post-nuclear world, I guess.
Yeah, but pretty much we've summed up everything on the movie. We probably left some stuff out, but we only talked about the important stuff, so we advise everyone to watch this movie, even if you are a Fist of the North Star fan or not. But, yeah, if you haven't seen the movie, don't listen to this podcast first.
Well, too late.
Yeah, too late now. Yeah. We didn't even do a spoiler alert. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, I think our listeners should know by now that we spoil everything. If we have diehard listeners to this, they should know offhand that we talk about everything.
Yeah,
for the good or for the bad. You know, we spoil everything so they don't have to watch it, or if we talk about it, like, I need to check this out. So,
well, too late.
I don't
now.
Know. I can always do, like, a spoiler alert on my when I post this on my blog, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we're at 57 minutes, so I think we've talked about it enough.
Yeah, we got a good chunk out of this.
Yeah, we filled up the whole episode. So, I guess it's time for closing remarks. Is Chibi Goku still here?
Yes.
Do you have any?
Huh?
Do you have any closing remarks?
Not really.
Okay, what about Josh?
Free CWC!
Indeed. Zionic?
Stay tuned for the next episode of The Cool Kids Club. With our episode of Death to Ears 2, our listeners are already dead.
Watch out!
Pizza.
That was good.
And that's all. Ron Paul.
Next week, the Cool Kids Club bears witness to the fight between the schools of North and South over the love of a woman. Meanwhile, the infamous tale of a troubled man from Virginia is revealed to listeners throughout the world. Next time on the Cool Kids Club, Death to Ears 2, our listeners are already dead.
お前はもう死んでいる。